showing Tahrim the idea of Kedoshim. Kedoshim means to be holy. And God said to Moshe, speak to the congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, Kedoshim to you. You shall be holy. It's a command, actually. Because I need Elohim to take them. For I, the Lord your God, am holy. So, of course, the question arises, what exactly does it mean to be holy?
What does that mean?
Well, it's a rational, different interpretation. And then there's a very important, that's just to be pollution, to be separate. Rashi is difficult.
Because that's just to be pollution. Pollution means to be separate.
Well, separate from what? It says minharaya, from the forbidden sexual relations.
From minharaya, and from sin.
The difficulty with Rashi is that that would not be an additional
commandment. We've already been commanded. We've become a commandment of concerning the various forbidden sexual relations.
And Avera is sin. So why do you have to have a...
Why do you have to have another command
to separate from these Averos when they've already we've been commanded already? It's like a repetition.
According to Rashi, it's difficult to understand
what is new about the idea of Kedoshim to you. There's a one thing on this, which maybe we should take up at a different time, in its own right. It's worthy of a share in its own right, the Ramban. But I want to proceed, because right after this, you have in the next pasuk, Ish, Imo, the other Siro.
His mother and father shall they fear.
The Yesh Abdosite is Moru.
And my Sabbath shall you see.
I have the word your God. This is what I'd like to concentrate in Shiron.
The concept of
actually we'll call it Tibidah, but here it's not Tibud. Here it is Shir.
Shir.
And as you know, there are really two mitzvot that relate to a person's relationship with his parents. Not love. No, that's interesting. You mentioned that. But we're not commanded to love our parents.
It seems to tell us
the Torah goes is not in line with the person's natural emotions.
There is no mitzvah to love one's parent.
But there is a mitzvah to honor. Respect or honor, if you want. Actually, I think
perhaps honor would be a better term. A covet.
Respect and honor. There is also a command to fear, which is closely related to honor. This doesn't mean you have to have the emotion of fear.
What is the difference
between fear and honor? What does it mean to honor your parents?
Well, to respect, for example, to respect your parents.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, there's two sets of ideas here. The ideas of... Yeah.
One is more of a negative.
That is to say, I think the term war would be perhaps better. To show that there are...
On a higher plane, so to speak. For example, you can't.
In other words, it involves negative. In other words, how you speak to your parents.
How you speak to your parents.
For example, even if you don't agree with them,
and even if they're wrong,
and even if it's be wrong in a matter of halacha.
So it's one thing. You're not obligated
to do whatever, you know, just anything your parent wants you to do.
That's the thing that passes. That's not so that you know.
But even when you're disagreeing with your parents, and you are legitimately disagreeing, you're not allowed to speak fresh. You can't be fresh to your parents. You can't get upset with your parents. Because, I'm not going to go into the Rama, I think he mentioned many times. That's a very difficult Rama to understand.
At Heichan, the Rama says,
maybe we will go in the sixth parak of Mamram. The Kibbutz is mitzvah sasei gedola.
To honor one's
father, mother is a positive command gedola.
All mitzvahs are important, but he mentions it's very important, very significant.
The chen mora aviyim, and so too the fear of one's father and mother.
Shakalos and akasu bechvodo
u'mora ov. This is the Torah equated to the honor and fear of God, and then he quotes the Pesukim which.
Let's back up this point.
Alright? Now, we're not going to go through all the Rambams, but he says in Halacha Zayin, Ad Heichan Hu
Kibud Avim.
What is the extent? What's the limit? How far must the person go?
The parameters of Kibud Avim.
He says even if they took a kiss shells of Reuben, what's the term for it? A wallet or a purse full of gold coins, and to his face they threw into the sea. In other words, he has a expensive piece of jewelry or money, whatever the case may be, and they just took it and threw it into the ocean. Lo yachmimim,
he may not embarrass them.
For lo yisoyer b'sneihem,
and he can't even show his aggravation for them, how upset he is.
Lo yichos kenegdam,
and he can't get angry at them.
Lo yikabel gzeres hakasev v'yishto,
but rather he should accept the decree of the Torah and just be quiet. Now, I don't think he still would love at that point,
but it's basically on how you behave. Yadhechon moron. To what extent is the fear of them? Because even if he was all dressed up in his finest clothing, and he was sitting at the head of a meeting of the congregation, at a banquet, let's say, he's being honored, he's sitting at the head. And his father and mother came and tore up his clothing, and hit him over the head, and spit in his face.
Nice.
Right? That's it. So they came and they, embarrassing, public, which is the worst thing. First of all, there, by the way, this doesn't mean the parents have the right to do a thing like that. Then the parents do it, so they're going to be...
That's
Malvin, that's a Rambam, by the way.
The Rambam says, Ein lo chel gvel
amaba. A person who embarrasses another person publicly doesn't have a share in the world to come.
So these parents have no right to do this.
Nevertheless, he says, he may not embarrass them, but he must be quiet and fearful, and in a state of awe of the king, the Melech Malchei Melech, from God, who commands him in that way, who commands him to do this. If a physical king had decreed upon him something which would cause him even greater pain than this, he couldn't protest, he has to accept it. So then he says, Kavachom, how much more so if concerning the one who spoke in the world that was created, means say, how much more so God? That's the command of God. It's God's will that you should be subservient to your parents in this respect, which doesn't mean subservient you're subservient in how you live your life. You don't have to base your whole life on what your parents necessarily want you to be or want you to do. That's a different issue. But how you act towards them, how you speak to them, we're not going to go through all the laws. How you act towards them, that's the essence of Kibud Avim. And even if it's in the most provocative situation, the Rambam seems to say there's absolutely no heter whatsoever. It's interesting enough, we get a lot of shadows come up from students, because obviously there are these problems, and nobody's perfect here, but don't get along with their parents, and the parents want them to come and visit. And these are actual shadows that come up where these students have said that they want us to go on pay. We don't want to go. They're married, let's say, Pesach, or whatever the case may be. But that's not a stupid oven. You can't watch you. They were supposed to go visit the parent on the other side. But then here they say, but it's inevitable. After a day, we're fighting you. And, you have to control yourself. You're right, but it's impossible. Because they get on my case and this and that, and it's just impossible. I know that after a day or two, we're going to be fighting. So what do you do? On the one hand, if you don't go, then you're being disrespectful. Because that's to keep it out. Assuming your parents live within a normal distance, and they want you to come and visit on your entrance, and you have no reason why you shouldn't go, then you really should go. You owe them that. On the other hand, once we go, so the fact, in my case, as the pops in the medication I'm familiar with, is that if that's the case, if you know for sure that you can't control yourself, and you're going to wind up fighting with them, then don't go. Because then the whole is because of kavod. So here you're going to be worse off. You're going to be in violation. You're going to wind up in violation. So, the person is in that situation. For example, if a person should call up their parents every so often, keep in touch, whatever. Tell you to do so would be wrong. It would be a violation. But if every time you call them up, you're going to be getting into an argument. You're going to be just wind up disrespectful and don't call. So, that's the idea. But as far as love, it's interesting. You see, these are parents that, I mean, the Torah wouldn't say you have to love them. It's not based, by the way. The mitzvah really is not based upon what most people think it is. The mitzvah to honor your father and mother is not based upon the fact that it's what they've done for you, because of what you would call gratitude, a kara kato. It's not based upon that. The mitzvah is not based upon that. We just had a discussion about this, and we do reason. Because, for a number of reasons. First of all, because if that was so, then any parents that abandoned the child, let's say, gave the child for adoption, and the child was raised by strangers, adopted parents, and then, you know, later on in life, they meet their true parents. So you say, this person never did anything for me. And what do I owe them? Kibud av v'aim? Are you obligated to kibud av v'aim? The answer is yes. And the parents who raised you and gave you everything, even though biologically they weren't your parents, who did a tremendous mitzvah, can't hard to imagine a greater mitzvah, chesed, you're not obligated to kibud av v'aim. I mean, you're obligated in terms of chesed, of course, chesed. But there, they don't have the same rules. And as we see, even parents like this, even parents that basically mistreat, this would be a terrible thing to do, but nevertheless they are parents. It's based upon a different concept. Most people, and parents I suppose too, most people operate with this idea because of how much they've done to you. That's a false notion anyway. That's a false notion. Parents are not entitled to keep it up because of what they've done to the child. But rather it's because of what Chazal says, because the parent is really a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the famous Chazal. There are three shutzim in the creation of a person. There is God, and there's the father and the mother. Which means to say that it's an element of perfection. That's why it's part of the Aseret HaDibra. It's part of one's Amuna and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The idea of Amuna and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, belief in God, is the recognition that each person's existence is dependent. And that we, in and of ourselves, we have no basis for existence. We have no right to exist. We only exist because of God. God is the only true existence, the only necessary existence. And we have to always bear in mind the fact that we exist only because of the fact that there is a cause. Our existence requires a cause. Let's put it in a different way. God exists by nature. God's existence does not require a cause. Our existence requires a cause, which is outside of ourselves. Now, if a person is denying, the first area in which he recognizes this is a great God was parents. Without his parents, he wouldn't have existence. And when he thinks about that and he contemplates the entire situation, it leads him back to the idea of God. But to deny the parents is to deny the fact that his existence had needs a cause. He's saying that he exists. He's an entity in his own right. So one who denies his parents ultimately will deny God. So it's Kvot Shemayim, by the way. That's why the Gemara quotes the famous rabbis in the Talmud who would say that while the parent came in, he said, let me stand up to give honor to the Shekhinah, to the presence of God. He saw in his parent the representation of the Shekhinah, of the whole process of creation. The whole idea of creation is contained in honor. That's why it's a profound idea. That's why it's Pesach Gedolah. That's why it's Pesach Gedolah. But it's not necessarily the particular parent, in other words, what this parent has done for me, or even if the parent is just an ordinary person. It doesn't mean that the parent is exalted. The parent is exalted only insofar as the parent is a representative of the idea of a Kazakh. Now let's get back to the pasuk over here. So now we know that there are two mitzvot. There, by the way, I really believe that, of course, you know, I'm not going into all the aspects of Kibud Av V'aim. And we all know that it's a very difficult thing because there's so many powerful emotions that are tied up into this. But what I consider to be a helpful hint, I think a mistake that people make, one of the problems that people make in Kibud Av V'aim, when they relate to the parents more or less in the same way that they relate to everybody else. And the idea being that, well, this is prevalent in America, there's no respect for anyone, is that if they treat me, you know, I'll teach someone basically how they treat me. You know, that's the idea in the school. It used to be, you go to school, you have to respect people, that's it. Today, no. Today, a teacher has to earn the respect of the people. I don't know, I mean, there's truth in that, obviously, but I don't know if that's a good foundation. Kid has to know they have to respect their people, period. And that's the same idea. A lot of parents that take it, you know, became very fashionable in the last 20, 30 years for parents to be friends. And to earn the respect, rather than to demand the respect. And that's a false idea. In terms of a A parent says he shouldn't have to earn the respect. A parent, a child has to learn that they have an obligation to respect. Of course, an intelligent parent will act in a way that the child will want to respect them. That's a different point. But that's not what it's based upon. I think that the problem is we never get the idea out of our heads. We look at the relationship with parents as different, but in the same general heading, that I'll relate to anybody more or less how they relate to me. So if they're good to me, I'll be good to them. If they're mean to me, then either I'll be mean to them, or if I won't be mean to them, I won't be that nice to them. You have to look at, in my opinion, the problem, what causes the person to withhold respect from the parents is that you think you're giving it to the parents. It's something you're giving to the person. But if you bear in mind that it's not to the person, it's really to God, then you're going to become, you see. In other words, you're just looking at this person as a impersonal. I know it sounds a little cold, but I think it makes it a lot easier. As a representation of God. Now, I'm not doing it for you, I'm doing it for God. When I'm doing it for God, then it's very nice, and I don't mind standing up. I mean, you may, on a personal level, you may feel like hurt by your parents, neglected, so you don't want to give them, you don't want to help them with that coat. Because you're relating it to this person. Why should I give something to this person? But when you realize that this person is a representation of God and really giving honor to God, then it becomes a lot easier, in my opinion. But that's a suggestion. I don't know if it works. Okay, so some of you are Glenn. And don't feel too, we shouldn't feel that guilty either. Guilt, we learned last week. Reuben had too much guilt, remember? So the guilt was paralyzing in certain cases. Too much guilt is no good. Guilt is, a certain amount of guilt is good. Too much is no good. Chazal discussed this point to the extent that they held that it could very well be that there's no one that's really mekayem it properly, perfectly. Who did they find in the entire Torah? It's on the, look, give somebody else a chance. Who did they find in the entire Torah that they said was fulfilled with the ideal, the paradigm of being the kind of mitzvah? No, but you're close. Esav, the Lord said, yeah. Esav. You see the way Esav, they say, no one was the kind of mitzvah of Shiva Rav like Esav HaRasha. And they say, Esav more. Esav had, Esav had special garments that he would wear, like to dress up for a king. He wouldn't go to in the presence of his parents in his ordinary clothing. He would dress up in special garments. What? Ah. Now, the thing is, if that's the case, how do we square that with the fact that he's the greatest Russia? Esav is the father of Amalek? I mean, what's crazy? The answer is, when they said that, they didn't mean to say that he did it out of the proper motivation. But in terms of practice, how to execute it, the extent to which one should go, he did it for a false motivation. Because he needed the approval of his father. He did it for personal motivation. He didn't do it l'shem shemayim. But so they didn't mean to set him up as the example. But if I'm not mistaken, I think there were those rabbis that even said that in certain cases, it's better a person is better off if he's an orphan, because that way he doesn't violate Kibbutz Rabbi. I don't mean that. Of course, you have to understand what they mean. They didn't mean to say that on the whole. Well, society would be better off if everybody was an orphan. They don't mean it that way. They meant to indicate the extent to which it's so difficult to be the kind that's such popular. So there is truth in what you're saying, that it's very difficult to find someone that would be Mekayim. I mean, there's different degrees, it's relative. But they recognize that it's mitzvah gedolah, and you see the extent to which one's perfection evolves around this mitzvah. So you should look at it from that point of view. We tend to take it for granted. And we disregard the importance of Kiva. It's clearly disregard it. Except if you're a parent and you're raising children. But with regard to your children, you're mocked that they should understand the importance. Anyway, let's get back to the Sukkim over here. Being the kind of properly, it's very, very difficult, and I can't. It's relative. They can be mother certain aspects. For example, I want to sit here bother on my display. But they can give you permission to do so. They can be mokel the cover. But that's only up to a point. You can't embarrass them and so on and so forth. There's certain things that they can't. They mean just take those out of the category, and they can be mokel the cover. The cover is the positive element. We're gonna compare and contrast this pasuk over here. You are familiar with this, and the pasuk which commands us in honor. That's in Yisro Ne'aseh V'Devot, That's Kavir Tavikavir Sinacha. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the first difference that we noted. In the case of Kavod, Kavir Tavikavir Sinacha, it mentions the father first, Ani, a father and mother. Here, in the case of Yira, Mora, here, it mentions the mother first. Okay? Yes. So I want to go into that again. Take a look at Rashi. Emo, the other Tiro. So it says, Rashi says, here it mentioned the mother before the father. So there's a reason for it. Why? Because it is known to God that the son fears the father more than the mother. And by honor, think about this. It's known to God that the child fears the father more than the mother. So therefore, it has to emphasize the mother over here. The emphasis is on the mother, because the father is the child's going to naturally fear. Now, when it comes to kavod, it mentioned the father before the mother, because it's known to him that the child tends to honor the mother more than the father, because she persuades him with words. The mother relates differently. The father generally never. Yeah. So the question I'd like to ask, though, is the Torah recognized that the tendency of the child is to honor the mother, because the mother relates with softness and kindness, where the father represents more the discipline, toughness, and fears the father more. So therefore, by fear, it emphasized the mother, so it mentioned the mother first. And by honor, it emphasized the father, mentioned the father first. Now, what's the idea? I mean, is it simply how we thought, well, what's the concept over here? So what do you gain by mentioning it first? What is it teaching us? So now we know that it's the natural tendency by love is this way, by fear is the other way. So the Torah reversed it. So what does the Torah accomplish by, what do you accomplish with it? So what? So it is, that's what I'm saying. It's a different matter to combat this problem. Is the Torah simply just mention it first for a point of emphasis, or is there an idea that goes along with it? It should be the same. It should be the same. So what is the idea that we learn from it? That's what I was getting at. I mean, what you're saying is correct. It's teaching us a very important lesson over here, and that is that our behavior to our parents, there's a real perfection involved. It's not just what you owe to them. There's a real perfection for the self. The real perfection of the self is that you train yourself not to act, not to base your actions in accordance with your emotional disposition. That's the real perfection. That's the awareness. That is to say that there is a certain disposition to honor the parents, to honor the mother, because the mother is a nice one, but it's dead. It doesn't mean that's just a generic. I mean, in every case can be different. I mean, the situation can be reversed. The lesson is the same. There is a natural disposition to fear the father, because the father is tough. And the Torah is saying that the real perfection in the mitzvah is when you don't act out your emotions, but rather your actions are based upon your objective awareness of what is correct. If that is the case, see, that determines the true kibbutz from the emotional kibbutz. The true kibbutz is where you're basing your actions on an objective basis of what's right and what's wrong. If that's the case, then the yira to the mother, where you don't have the emotion. See, the real perfection is when you're doing the correct action in a situation where the emotion is not there. So that's why the Torah is presenting it in a way to teach you what the true perfection of kibbutz is. The true perfection of kibbutz, when it comes to cover, is seen in the cover to who? To the father. To the father. That's the true perfection. It's seeing more. The true perfection is more visible when the kavod is given to the father than to the mother. The true perfection of yira is seen in the case where it's given to the mother and not the father, as opposed to where it's given to the father. I don't mean to say not the father, obviously. You see what I'm saying? That's the true perfection. And that explains what the Torah says when you see the animal of your friend, Romit Tachas Masar, when it's laden beneath its burden. Not of your friend, it says, the ox of your enemy, the chadaltim, as oblo, and you don't want to to help you. You know, your natural inclination is Arzokazayu. So why did Torah choose to command us that we have to stop and help our friend, or his animal, his property? In the case of the enemy, it should have mentioned it's enough. I mean, your fellow Jew. No, but it mentioned in the case of your enemy, because the real perfection, you see, when you go outside, right, and you see some things, somebody else's garbage cans, whatever, and the wind blew it over. You take a look, you know the number, and you know, it's against a neighbor, you don't mind, it's not a big chance. So you feel good about yourself, you know. Makes you feel good, but then you return it. What you have to do, you have a few or three tennis. So that's a mitzvah, that's a good deed. You're not allowed to just ignore it and go back into the house, because it's somebody else's property, you can get lost. But what about when you see, you pick it up and you see it belongs to a person that's the enemy? You really have on the house with these, and you consider these people to be wrong and to be low-level people, miserable, you know, the last people in the world you want to see. So now you have to be a messenger for them to take their garbage cans and bring it over. And what if it's an object where you have to actually ring the bell? So you can't just leave it outside, you have to give it to them? To ring the bell and to bring back their thing? That's the real perfection of chesed. See, again, it's not where it goes against the emotion. And where a person is acting on a level of objectivity, on the rational good, even where it goes against the emotion. That's the Kibbutz Avos. Okay. Now, that's the concept with regard to Kibbutz Avos. All right? Now, what's the next interesting point over here? The juxtaposition. Right? It says, a man shall fear. Of course, it applies to women too. It's the generic ish. His mother and father, and my Sabbath shall he keep. I am the Lord, your God. Now, of course, the question is, what's the connection between the two? What's the qualification? What's the qualifier, Jackie? Okay, so Rashi says that it comes to teach us. For example, let's say your parents tell you tomorrow to come. Right. Or to leave the yeshiva and go to college or something. Or to cut down on the hours you spend. See, Shabbos like tomorrow, everybody agrees. The Torah takes the case where we'll all agree. But what about, as I said, where the parents insist that the child has learned enough, or to cut down the hours and put more time at the college, or go to a better college, a fancier college, and stuff like that. But let's hold on. I don't want to get... We'll get into that later. The case where everybody agrees is where the parents want the child from Chal Shabbos. So the Torah is telling us that you might be in a conflict. You might think, on the one hand, God commanded me in the Shabbos. That's one of the Ten Commandments. On the other hand, God commanded me to honor my father and mother. So I'm supposed to do. I lose either way. So the answer is, Eshabsos, I just noticed, that you're only obligated, right? You shouldn't think, Rashi says, even though I warned you about fear of the father, if he says to you to do a Chal Shabbos, do not listen to him. And that, of course, applies to all the other mitzvahs. All right, now the question I have on this, two questions I have. But before I ask my two questions, I'll give you a chance to ask your question. My first question is, that's the question, why does the Torah have to state it over here, the Eshabtos HaKishmoro, to teach me this principle? The Torah didn't have to state it over here. The fact of the matter is, it's a question like any other question. You have many questions on Halacha. There's always a lot of situations of conflict between one mitzvah, a mitzvah of Yantif, and another mitzvah, where if burial comes out on Yantif, which supersedes which, Avelos, if mourning comes out during Chol HaMoed, or if the mourning came out before the holiday knocks it off, sometimes it doesn't knock it off, it's like any other question over here. So you have a question of Kibbutz Avos, right? And you have a question, what about, there's many situations, like the Rambam said, what about a situation where they embarrass the life out of you? Are you allowed to at least show that you're upset? That's a question. The Torah didn't write about that openly. It's worked out in the halachas. So why did the Torah have to state it over here? When the Torah states the Shabbosai Kishmoru, it's just to teach me this halacha. It must be teaching me an idea. First of all, it's part of the concept of fearing your father and mother. That's my first. Do you understand my question? You understand my question? In other words, I mean to say that the question is, what's the point? Again, I'll repeat it. What's the reason for the juxtaposition? So the Rashi says to teach me that if they tell me to violate a law, I don't listen to them. And if it was, that's just the halacha. That didn't have to be stated over here. It could have been brought down the halacha. When the Torah states it over here, it has to therefore be teaching you something about the very idea of the mitzvah of fearing your parents. That's my question, my first question. So what does it teach me about the idea? I have one other question, it's interconnected. The question is like this. There are two mitzvahs of Kibbutz Av, the aim. One in this kavod and in this fear. Now which one is stated first in the Torah? Kavod, if it is. Honoring your parents. That's stated first. That's in the Aseret Dibros. Now why did the Torah wanted to connect the teaching, the lesson, that the law stops, where does this halacha, it stops at the doorstep of breaking the mitzvah? Why didn't it say this by color? Kaved es avicha v'et imecha v'yashabtosai tishmaru. Right? The idea apparently of v'yashabtosai tishmaru is very, to keep my Sabbath, is very much connected to the idea of kibud avim. Now kibud nir are two sides of the coin. Kibud nir are two separate mitzvahs, but they're two opposite sides of a coin. So since the Torah stated kaved es honor thy father and mother, it should have stated right then and there the Yeshabtah of Yisrael, because that goes hand in hand. Why did you wait until it came to this mitzvah, right? When it mentioned the mitzvah of fear, a man shall fear his mother and father and my Sabbath. Why did it say? Is that just arbitrary? Is that just accidental? Or there must be a reason? That's one of the very good points. I hadn't thought of that. That's a bonus. Yeah, I got a bonus from coming right there. That's what I said in the, that's an excellent point that Laurie's making. I hadn't intended to go into it. Laurie's trying to explain when Rashi says that it says Shabbos, but it applies to any mitzvah that your parent tells you to violate, that you would not listen. So Laurie said, but why did Torah choose to make the point bedafka with the mitzvah of Shabbos? Because, as we were saying, the reason why you have to give honor to your parents is because they represent the fact that you're a created being, and ultimately they're a reflection of the ultimate creator. Well, that's the whole concept of Shabbos. Shabbos, we give testimony to the fact that the world was created. The world was created from nothing, Yesh Me'ayim. And that this whole world exists only because of the will of the creator. So when the parent is acting in such a way that it takes you away from the ultimate creator, and then they cease to be in the framework of Kibbutz Av Me'ayim. That's a very good point. That's what you're saying.
Now, but also what I also want to say was the family.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's more than just teaching you the halacha. There's a conflict between fear of your parents and keeping the Shabbos. Of course, it's true. But I think it has to be that it teaches us something about the very nature of the mitzvah itself. And I'll try and answer in conjunction with why the doctrine wasn't stated by Kavod. See, because we started out with the idea of how difficult it is to fulfill such a problem. Right? And everybody can relate to that. Now why that is so is because very strong emotions, rebelliousness, part of our nature to be rebellious, to be independent, egotism, you know. You don't like people infringing on your own freedom. That's one end of the spectrum. So it's difficult. It's difficult because your parents, each person is always striving to be free, to be independent, you don't want to be told, you don't want to be subjugated. So that's the basis of the, not to mention other, a whole bunch of psychological factors is, you know, why people are angry at their parents. They always find cause to be angry at their parents, didn't do enough for them, whatever the case may be. So we can understand why it's a difficult thing to do. So, as we said, the real perfection over here in Kibbutz Av, if a person, this is the key, if a person can perfect himself in this area, he can perfect himself in virtually any area, because you're dealing with every emotion that you're going to encounter. Every emotion you're going to encounter with regard to other people and other situations, yeah, you're going to find in this area. So on the one hand, we said that it's not to act out your emotions, but to become aware of them, to master them, and to act in a rational way with regard to your feelings. Now, there are two different kinds of emotions. On the one hand, there's the emotion of rebelliousness, which leads a person not to want to honor their parents. The emotion of selfishness, of narcissism, which wants to be great. You know, who are they? He negates what his parents did for him, and so on and so forth. So, of course, that has to be overcome. Why did the Torah have to tell you the Yeshav Tosai Tishmorus? The Torah has said, not the halacha. It's not only because you wouldn't know the halacha. Is it simply because you wouldn't know the halacha, or is there an emotional problem here as well? See, the other side of the spectrum, there's two defects that a person has. A person can have an excessive emotion of rebelliousness, and he can't tolerate authority. Ah. There's another defect, though, that a person has with regard, and that is that he can't fulfill another pasuk in the Torah. Al kein yazav ish, it says, by therefore shall a man abandon as other v'yadimo, as part of the delak v'yisho, and cling to his life, v'yad l'basarecha. But the Torah says, al kein yazav ish. Why does the Torah have to tell us that? What do you mean? He doesn't really abandon his parents. I always had a difficulty with that. I mean, just because on the surface there, it could be very well misunderstood. What's the Torah telling you? That's marriage. You get married and you're supposed to abandon your parents. You know it's not true. You don't abandon your parents. But I think that the point is, it means that the Torah recognized that this is the nature of Adam. That the human being, more than any other animal, goes through a very lengthy period of dependence. You know, no one is born in a mature fashion. There's a lengthy period of dependence because the human being is the most complex organism. The less complex the organism, the less the period of dependency. Animals come to maturity relatively quick. But for a person, it only takes many, many years. And some people get there very slowly. And some people hardly ever get there. They always, you know, they don't become mature. So on the other end of the spectrum is the person, and that's by where do you see this? Another institution in halacha that represents this? That's the Eved Ivri. The whole idea of the Eved Ivri. If he says after the first 6 years he wants to be an Eved forever, and an Eved Ivri keeps all the mitzvot. He keeps all the Jewish servant keeps all the mitzvot, but he says he likes his master. He likes to be an Eved. So then his ear has to be pierced as a sign that he has a blemish, because this ear heard they are my avadayim, are supposed to be servants of God and not servants of servants. Which means to say that this person suffers from a certain defect, which he can't operate in an independent fashion in the world, and he, in order to be secure, he has to have the protection of a human master. But he has to have the protection of a human master, that he cannot have a perfect relationship with God. The perfect relationship with God demands that he be independent of dependency, psychological dependency. Al-Tiftachu b'Nadim, do not place your faith in princes. V'Ved Adam, in the Son of Man, she'ein lo teshuah, in whom there's no salvation. So a person, in order to achieve perfection, has to be confident that the only way that he can succeed is if he follows, he has to operate intelligently and be in line with the Torah, and he has to have a moon and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. If he denies that, if he says, I can't be secure in this world unless I have a protector, then he's denying the Torah. He's denying God. God's a lower easy tzaddik mezav. I've never seen a tzaddik who's been abandoned, because that's the nature of the universe, that God set up a system in which that's the whole business of Muslims. Who knows they left Machol Basar? God takes care of Kilion Chasar. That's part of the perfection of God. Exactly. That is the whole perfection of Adam. And that is to say that he removes himself, he has to be able to remove himself from any sort of a human protector, in the sense that he's totally dependent on a human protector. And that's, of course, the whole essence of idolatry. Idolatry, and Chazal pointed out, with physical idol, there's always the representation of some image. He has some image that he depends on. And it's usually some image from childhood. Psychologically, when a person bows down to an idol, it's always an image. He needs that protection of a human image. He's still subservient to the human image. Now, I think that the Torah
You see, you have to see every mitzvah. There's no like we learned last week with Reuven, with Tshuva. He did Tshuva and he had the guilt feelings about his sin that he had committed when he got to his father. But for Tzachar Vatai, he was too preoccupied with the guilt at a time when he should have been involved in saving Yosef. Took him away from this. Here too, Kibbut Avim. On the one hand, we have to be able to break away from the negative emotions. The childish, infantile emotions that want to tell us to rebel. Who are they? Who are they to tell me what to do? They never give me any freedom, never give me any room. And all the negative emotions. On the other hand, on the other end of the spectrum, you have the individual who is going to be in a tremendous quandary when his parent tells him to do Chal Shabbos. Except you're not going to find it that frequently in the case of Shabbos. You're not going to find it that frequently. You're going to find it, where are you going to find it? Well, it's probably true, it may have it more of them, you know. But Shabbos, you'll find it in the subtle cases that I mentioned before. Where a person wants to raise himself to why he wants to live differently than his parents. The parents can be, and you can find it with Orthodox parents that will never dream of telling him to do Chal Shabbos. But they will tell him to violate the Torah in other ways. In very subtle ways, I'm sorry? Exactly. In cases, I'm sorry? Yeah, there are cases where they're observant, but they have their idea as to how his career has to go, and what you must do, and how you was raised. You have to live your life the way they know the way it has to be, so it's very, they sent you to a yeshiva. It's really a very subtle case. They sent you to yeshiva. And they gave you a Jewish education. Well, of course they want you to learn, and they a year after high school, you have to go to Israel and learn for a year. That's part of the social thing. It's a social thing. I mean, it's a good thing. I mean, but for learning. But that's it. Now, if you come back, now college is the main focus. And not just any college, because it's got to be a very prestigious, because you have to get a fine degree. In spite of that, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. It's college, unfortunately, the parents of today are operating with the idea of college that existed 20 and 30 years ago. There's been a tremendous change. Not to say that you shouldn't go, but you have to look at the whole thing differently. But that's not the point. The point is absolute. And these absolutes interfere. The child might want to go into a different way of life. He wants to spend more time learning, or less time college, it'll take him longer, or he may not even want to have the same lifestyle as his parents. His parents are used to living in a very high lifestyle. They're very wealthy. And their concept of what you must have entails a tremendous amount of effort and work, and he's different. He wants to have a decent lifestyle, but he'd rather sacrifice in the material and learn more. But there's a tremendous battle going on. Because his life, the way he's worked it out, would mean he wants to put in another 4 or 5 years of learning, and he'll take a few courses at night, and he won't get his degree, or whatever it is. And he may not even want to go to college. He may have a different idea of Hanukkah. And the parent is pressuring him tremendously. I use this example because this has been my experience in a number of cases. To take him out of the yeshiva. To take him out of the yeshiva. To stop learning. Now here's the case. Eshav Sosa Tishmoru. Now, I have seen certain individuals who thought it over, what's stuck? What are you supposed to do? And the answer is that we don't believe that you're supposed to rely on miracles. You can't just stay on your learning and forget about parnassa and be a burden to somebody else. You've got to be intelligent and work out a parnassa. But when a person has worked, he knows what he needs and he has a plan and he's worked out a parnassa, and at the same time he wants to put in tremendous amount of many hours in learning, and his plan is different than the plan of his parents, which would mean that he has to give up learning, because then according to Allah, he does what's his parents. Because they're telling you to give Torah. That would be the same. That case is not the same case as Eshav Sosa Tishmoru. I've seen many students who caved in. Because the parents brought to bear upon them the full force of all the pressure. No. If you do this, if you don't listen to me, that's it, you're finished. I'm going to cut you off. Don't come to me for anything. And of course, there's a whole bunch of benefits. The money, or the car, or the support, the security. It's a psychological phenomenon. I understand the crisis that it could put an individual into. Because now it's the other emotion, the fear of separating himself. And you're very cases where the parents have tremendous psychological significance. And the fear is you'll be all alone. I mean, I know these things are all the time. I know cases right now where the parents put their child through a tremendous crisis because the child is now, it's not a child, it's a grown individual, but he really recognizes the tremendous importance of learning, and he sees a different way. He sees that he could have both. And in America, he could have both. Well, you could always have both, but more so in America. And on the other hand, there's a tremendous fear. But he's always counted on the support of his parents. And to be totally alone and to have to make his own way for a number of years until he's actually going to be in a situation is very frightening. And it's not just monetary, it's a psychological thing. You're right, exactly. That's the real mystery. Now, that's why this lesson, which of these two emotions come into play in this situation? The emotion of fear. The fear of the parents. The desire to love, you know, to be honored with parents is one thing. But the emotion to honor the parents is not the one that's going to cause the conflict. It's the fear of the parents. So it's telling you that the fear of the parents should not stem from a defect within you, from a weakness. That the fear of the parent can be the fear of the person who's insecure, who feels that he can't survive without the parental support. The fear of the parent is different. It should be a rational thing because it's proper to show awe of the parents insofar as they represent the Creator. But if we're talking about a different kind of fear, an erotic kind of fear, a fear which is masking your own insecurity, your own weaknesses. See, any mitzvah could always be a perfect mask for a person's insecurities and fears, and there's in many, many areas. That's why the Torah says, "Yesh imo v'yashiro," it's a very, very good thing. But imo. Because emo is not the same emotion. Emo is a rational fear of one's parents. And if you have a rational fear of your parents, then shop so tight to shmoru. Then you realize that it has to be leading to perfection. It's taking you away from perfection. If it's an emotional fear, then it can take you away. You see, there's no free ride in Judaism. There's no guarantee. A person just fails, he does a mitzvah. If you just do a mitzvah blindly, there's no one mitzvah in the world that's going to naturally perfect it. And while I'm on this, my next question was, Kedoshim to you, what's the connection? What's the connection between the two? Let's finish the point. Don't divert me. I'll write that in. See? Now you'll understand. I'm taking a different tack than Rashi and Ramban, because there's room for more. I think I fit in a little bit with Rashi. Not so directly, but I'm taking a different tack. Kedoshim to you, to be holy. What does it mean to be holy? What does it mean to be holy? What I'm saying, by the way, I think now that I think about it, will fit in with the Ramban. And then, the very first mitzvah after Kedoshim is what? Ish Imo V'yam Tiro. So there must be some very important connection between Kedoshim and between Kibbutz Avim. What's the connection? And the reports upon Kol HaDor Kulo. You just said it before. Mitzvah, you mentioned it. Shleimut. It means perfection, which means, Shleimut means wholeness, perfection, which teaches us that just a person that just believes, he just does the mitzvot per se, just performance of the mitzvot per se, is not going to automatically, there's no automatic perfection. The mitzvot are a guide to perfection. But if you're going to do the mitzvot without the wisdom, the chachma, the intelligence, the understanding, you say, just blind performance of one mitzvah to another, without any chachma, without any seichel, then it's not going to perfect you. Well, Esav wasn't even doing the mitzvah, he was just doing the action. So, that's Kedoshim, that I'm giving you a system. I'm giving you a system, but see, I think you're picking with Ramban. Ramban says the opposite, the negative. Well, let me just tell you quickly. Ramban says, it's telling us not to be a manuvo version of the Torah. Have you ever heard that idea? Manuvo means a disgusting, a lowlife, within the framework of the Torah. That is to say, you can keep the Torah can't force you to be perfect. The Torah, you can't legislate perfection. The Torah prohibited certain foods and certain drinks and so forth. The concept behind it is that one should be on a high level, should not be steeped in his instincts. And the Torah prohibited certain sexual relations. And even with your own spouse, with your wife, there are times when you can't even have relations. All this is to bring us to a higher level, to live a life which is not just rooted in base instincts. But the Ramban says, but the Torah couldn't legislate every situation. You could observe all these. You cannot violate it. These are the negatives. Neither you can eat, never eat forbidden food, and still be like a person who's a glutton. Which there's enough kosher, especially today. You can go from there, you can spend your whole day eating, drinking, And within the framework of Torah, a person can gratify the sexual. So the Torah didn't write it like Kedoshim means to relate to the Torah in such a way that you elevate yourself. Oh, but simply avoidance of violation, avoidance of Avera, does not in and of itself mean perfection. Now I'm going to take that idea and apply it to the positive. Performance of the positive in and of itself does not necessarily mean perfection. A person can keep Shabbos, a person can keep a tzedakah, a person can do every one of the Tayyag mitzvahs. Of course, there'll be a high line. There'll be a high. There's definitely sentiments, I don't mean to say that. But I mean, the real perfection is Kedoshim to you. To recognize that your performance of the Torah must be together with a life in which you're gaining insight, the insight. Insight into the wisdom of Torah, insight into yourself, and perfection. Kedoshim to you means to perfect yourself through the mitzvah. See? If that's the case, if that's why Ishim of the Abdirah, it gives you a conflict right away. Yeah, on the one hand, you have to honor your father and mother. On the other hand, you got to keep my Shabbos, which means to say that you've got to derive from Kibbutz Aviyim the element of perfection. And it shouldn't be based upon a neurosis of a fear, of a dependency, which would cause you to violate the mitzvah. So that's the idea of Kedoshim to you, that one should relate to the Torah and seek to perfect himself from the Torah, not to be complacent. I'm observant, I'm orthodox, I do the mitzvah, I don't do any avarice, so therefore I'm perfect? No. No. It's got to be with involvement in the Chachmas HaTorah and applying it to yourself. If you're not growing, you have to grow in Torah. And how do you grow in Torah? By knowledge and by introspection. You got to get to know yourself and your own emotions and work on yourself and work on yourself. And that way you're becoming cut off. You're becoming a holier person. It's a whole change in the personality. But the other way, to just sit back and to be complacent and to do mitzvot and be happy and grow with yourself as you keep the Torah, that's not Kedoshim to you. That's the idea. Because in the Hashem, because I, the Lord your God, am holy, it means we have to pet just like me, imitate God. The midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that God has revealed to us. Of course, God doesn't have midos, it's just terminology. We can't say anything, we don't know anything about God in a positive sense. But God revealed his actions to us. And those are the actions which reflect perfection, and that's what we're supposed to emulate. That's the whole idea. The qualifier that's given by Yira applies to Kadosh. But of the two, the more appropriate place to say would be with regard to that aspect which hits on the emotion which would cause you to collapse and give in and violate the Torah. The one which would cause you to violate the Torah is the emotion of fear. Your emotion of fear tells you I can't survive without your support. And in fact, that's what you see. Those who do give in to parental pressure are doing so out of a sense of fear. More so than cover. Out of a sense of fear because they're just afraid to face the world on their own. And they feel that if their parents withdraw their support, then they're going to fall apart. Yeah. I understand your question. The only thing is, it's true. It's never stated in the form of a mitzvah. That's a good point. The term if the ideas, as Laurie said, the ideas are there. This may even look like a mitzvah. For example, you're not supposed to hit your child, although they tell you to hit your child, but they say once your child is over 13, you're not supposed to hit him. Because that's what they either, because he's not going to control himself, he may hit you back. And that's a very serious violation. But all of the prohibitions, they have not going to apply to your child. It's because unless you're doing it l'shem shemayim, in other words, you can't embarrass, you can't, like a rebbe. The only one that has exemptions, a rebbe can embarrass a student, provided he's doing so, because he realizes the student really needs it. The student has not been taking his learning seriously, or whatever, he can embarrass him. But other than that, a parent doesn't have any special rights with regard to a child. If the parent is just acting out their own emotions. Now, why there's no specific admonition? It's a good question. I mean, it's not a problem for us. It's not a real problem in the sense that it's clear. It's made clear through so many different ways in the whole literature of Torah that a parent should be very careful in how they raise a child. Right? For the sake of Torah and so on and so forth. But why you're asking why there's no specific mitzvah or command, that's not the reason to answer.